30 minutes of the week, three ideas, 30 minutes, Parshas Noach, to get us energized and ready, hopefully stimulate some meaningful conversation for our Shabbos table. This week's Parsha, of course, is Parshas Noach, which is so rich with ideas, it's very difficult even to know where to start. So I'm going to start with the following imagery. Imagine for a second Noach is leaving the Teva. Now Noach has been in the ark for a very long time. He's been working hard with the animals. Finally, he comes out convinced that the land is dry. And what does he see? Complete desolation. He sees the world is inhabited. It has been completely and utterly destroyed. Everything has been wiped out. So says the Medrash, what does Noach do immediately upon exiting the Teva? He looks to Hashem and he says, Hashem, how could you do something like this? How could you ruin such a great world? How can you destroy so many people and so many trees? How can you cause such devastation? And according to the Medrash, Hashem looks back at Noach and he says, Noach, now you care. Now you're davening to me. What took you so long? Where were you before the flood? And of course, that Medrash taps into so many broader ideas about Noach. Because in many ways, Noach is my favorite Parsha because no one is neutral about Parsha's Noach. Right? You can be neutral about Parsha's Lech Lecha. You can be neutral about Parshios Tazria Mesorah. Nobody is neutral about Parsha's Noach. Everybody has an opinion about Noach. Was he a good guy? Was he a bad guy? Very first Rashi on the Parsha taps into that idea. Yesh Dorshim L'Shvach, Yesh Dorshim L'Gnai. Already this dispute goes back many generations. How do you view Noach? And everyone has a very strong feeling. So I have to make an admission. My admission is that for years, I was very down on Noach. I always read this Parsha, and I always noticed the negative Divrei Torah about Noach. And for some reason, when I read into the character of Noach, who Noach was and what he accomplished, I always read it in somewhat of a negative sense. And so this year, I want to redeem myself for one very good reason. As my wife yells at me every year. My wife says to me every year, what did little Noach do to you? Why do you pick on him? Shouldn't you be giving him the benefit of the doubt? So this year, I want to offer some Divrei Torah that are going to redeem Noach, that are going to make us view him in a positive light, despite the Midrashim and despite all the Vortlach against Noach. I am here to defend Noach. That is my agenda here with you this morning. So with that as an introduction, here we go. Idea number one comes from the Zohar. The Zohar tells us that Noach is compared to the Holy Shabbos. Now what does that mean that Noach is compared to Shabbos? Says the Chozem in Lublin something very interesting, quoted by the Slonim Rebbe in his Nesivo Shalom and in other Chassidish Svarim as well. That the same way Noach built himself an ark to shield himself from the influences and destruction around him, so too we have Shabbos, which is there to protect us and to guard us from the destructive and nefarious influences that surround us. And if you look at this in the light that the Chozel Milblin describes it, then Noach's retreat into the Teva is no longer a bad thing, but Noach's retreat into the Teva is now the best thing. Because Noach retreated in the Teva because the only way that mankind can perpetuate themselves is that after spending 120 years of building and putting in effort to convince people that they were going down the wrong path, Noach eventually has to pull back. And he has to protect himself. And he has to shield himself physically and more importantly, spiritually from the devastation and the destruction around him. Says the Chozem Lublin, that is what Shabbos is. That 6 days a week we are compared to Noach of his 120 years building the Teva. 6 days a week we are in perpetual motion. We are building and we are working and we are putting in effort. We are earning a living. We're doing all the things that we're supposed to do. And that's not a bad thing. It's critical. It's necessary, right? That's 6 days a week. But then we come to the seventh day of the week. Shabbos is the day that we pull back. Shabbos is the day that we enter into our protective tevot, that we enter into our own personal arks in order to protect ourselves and to enjoy a respite from the other 6 days. We pull back from the rest of the world in an attempt, in an order to re-energize ourselves and to once again come close to Hashem. And so Shabbos is that day where we recharge our spiritual batteries so that we can enter into the coming week that much more inspired. And so I believe that this comparison of the Chozem Lublin between Noach and Shabbos is there to remind us that Noach was a tzaddik. Because being a tzaddik, being a righteous person, means sometimes escaping, sometimes retreating to re-energize yourself, to protect yourself, and to recharge your spiritual batteries. I had a friend once who compared Shabbos to a yo-yo. If you think about the imagery of a yo-yo, what happens? I drop the yo-yo, it goes down, 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 down. Then it hits the bottom, and what immediately happens? It starts bouncing right back up. That bottom is Shabbos. All week long, we are coming farther and farther away from Hashem by the simple fact that we have to work. We have to function in this world. We have to engage and interact with society around us. But then we hit that Shabbos, and what does it do? It propels us right back up, closer to Hashem. There was a second Slonim Rebbe, not the Nesiv HaShalom, but a different Slonim Rebbe, quotes the following story in his Sefer the Divrei Shmuel. It's obviously an imagery, it's a parable, but I think it resonates profoundly. That there was once a peddler that was traveling from town to town, meager and cheap items he was trying to sell. One time he was making his way between two villages when all of a sudden, you and I both know this, those who live in Florida, all of a sudden the skies opened up. And this winter storm, not the winter part, but the skies opening up part, this winter storm erupted. And soon the peddler finds himself completely covered with a thick layer of snow, facing these biting winds. And so he loses his way, he can't see where he's going. He's marching on helplessly with no direction, losing all feeling in his fingers and his toes. His cheeks are red as he treks through the forest. Suddenly off in the distance, he catches a glimpse of an inn sitting in the middle of the forest. And with all of his strength, he trudges one step in front of the other, in front of the other, until he finally comes to the inn. And inside the inn, he sits next to this warm fire. He has a delicious dinner, and he falls into a very deep and relaxing sleep. Next morning, he wakes up, and after a hearty breakfast, the peddler steps forth into that same exact wintry snow, but now he is much stronger and much more confident that he will find his way and that he will be all right. Says the Divrei Shmuel, the second Slonim Rebbe, that our lives in this world is like the journey in the forest through the inclement weather, that sometimes we are affected by the world around us, sometimes we might even lose our way. But Shabbos is the inn. Shabbos is the fire, and Shabbos is the food. It is the respite from that storm. It is what allows us to re-energize our spiritual batteries so that when we step forth back into that storm the next week, we feel that much more confident in our ability to find our way and to remain all right. Says the Divrei Shmuel, says the Chozem Lublin, that was Noach. Don't think that Noach's retreat into the Teva was a bad thing. I always read it as a bad thing. I always read it like the other Hasidim point out, Rav Tzadok famously pointed out that Noach was compared to a tzaddik in pelts, which means he was like a righteous person in a wool coat. Right? If you're very cold in a room, there are two ways to warm you up. One way is by putting on a warm coat, where I myself am warm, but everyone else has to figure it out for themselves. Option number two is for me to light a fire. And by me lighting a fire, I don't just warm myself, but I light up everyone else in the room as well. And so I always viewed Noach that way. Lignai! Noach was wrong. He retreated into the Teva. He took care of himself and didn't take care of everyone else. Not this year, my friends. This year, we love Noach. We're redeeming Noach. Noach was a tzaddik. Why? Because sometimes you make yourself into a tzaddik by learning to escape every now and then, by learning to re-energize and to retreat and to protect yourself in order to recharge those spiritual batteries. That is what Shabbos is for us, my friends. Shabbos is our opportunity. It's our time to tap into that ability to recharge our spiritual batteries. It is the inn, it is the fire, it is the food which gives us the confidence to go back into the world that much stronger. So idea number one is that Noach is a tzaddik. Why? Because Noach is compared to Shabbos. And the challenge of idea number one is that if Shabbos is that day to recharge our spiritual batteries, how do we use it? How do we spend our Shabbos? Are we using that time to learn, to daven, and to sing, and to reflect and to meditate? Are we using it to connect with those around us? Or is it simply a day off to work? It's a day off for me to catch up on the latest news, to read the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, to get even more fablundled about everything going on with, that's not a word, by the way, but it is now, right? More fablundled with everything that's going on in the world and the upcoming elections. How we use Shabbos will determine whether we experience it as that respite, as that opportunity to re-energize our spiritual batteries, or as just another day off from work. That's idea number one, how we are redeeming Noach this year, Tavshin Pei Aleph. Idea number two is very similar, but I saw it and I think it's an amazing idea. It comes from a beautiful sefer called Areshes Vaseinu. It's by Rabbi Eliyahu Schlesinger, who's a Rav in Gilo. He was actually, for those who remember, Rabbi Klein, Alav HaShalom, Zecher Tzadik, Livracha. So this was Rabbi Klein's relative. He has a beautiful sefer called Eila HaDvarim, which I've quoted often. And he has a second part of that sefer called Areshes Vaseinu. And I usually don't reference that sefer. I happened to pick it off the shelf this morning when I was looking for some ideas, and this jumped out at me, and I think it's an amazing idea. Gemara in Brachos tells us the following. Again, we are redeeming Noach this year. That is our agenda. That is our goal. Okay, so here we go. The Gemara in Brachos tells us of a very strange machlokes between Abaye and Rava. Now, we know that there are lots of machlokesim between Abaye and Rava. Listen to this one. Abaye and Rava have a yosvi kame de Rabba. So Abaye and Rava are sitting before Rabba. It's a little bit confusing, but you'll stay with me. Amar luhu Rabba. Rabba says to them, Lemi mevarchin, who are you making your brachos to? Now again, these were great tzaddikim, these were righteous individuals. It's a very strange conversation. Who are you making brachos to? So Amri le, they say back to him, Lerachmana. Of course we know we're making brachos to. We're making brachos to Hashem. Vehein, I'm sorry, he says back to them, V'hu chazar, v'rachmana heichi yasiv. Where does Hashem sit? Where do you find Hashem? Right? Obviously, they didn't know about Uncle Moshe yet, that Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere. So he says, where does Hashem sit? So Rava, what was Rava's answer? Ach ve l'shmei t'lala. Rava looks up to the ceiling of the house, and he said, that is where I find Hashem. Abaye does the opposite. Nafik levra achve kalpe shmaya. Rava goes outside and he points his hand up to the heaven and he says, that is where you can find Hashem. And the Gemara concludes with a statement that even though Abaye and Rava were very young at that age, it was very clear already at that moment in time that they were going to be great Talmidei Chachamim. What a strange conversation. What a strange machlokas between Abaye and Rava. Where is Hashem found? That Rava says he's found in the ceiling of my house. And Abaye says that he's found, no, outside, under the sun and the moon and the stars. What are they arguing about? Says Rav Schlesinger in this beautiful Sefer Areshes Vaseinu, Yesh Shnei Minei Tzadikim, that there are two types of righteous people. Yesh Tzadik Shem Isbodeid Beino Levein Atzmo, Uvein Atzmo Lekono, that there are those who only worry about themselves. V'yesh Tzadik She'amam Mizachech U'mekadesh Es Atzmo. And then there's a tzaddik that refines himself, that sanctifies himself, but doesn't just worry about himself, but he worries about other people as well. Now, obviously, which one's the bigger tzaddik, says Rav Schlesinger? Obviously, the one who doesn't just worry about himself, but worries about other people. But he says, this is what Abaye and Rav are arguing about. That Rav's point, when Rav looks to the ceiling of his house, he's saying, you know what you have to take care of first? If you want to really impact and influence the world, first, you have to make sure that you have a strong foundation. That if you don't have a strong foundation in Judaism, in Yiddishkeit, in Emuna, then if you go out into the world and you're throwing yourself to the wolves, says Rava. First, you find Hashem in your house. You build a strong foundation within yourself, and only then can you go and impact other people. Imagine the analogy of a cup of grape juice. My cup can only overflow. It can only spread to other people when the cup itself is full. Only when I fill myself up with a sense of emunah, and a sense of godliness, and a connection to Hashem, and the awareness and the information that allows me to live as a functional Jew, only then can I go out and interact and engage with the world and try to influence and impact other people. The Gemara in Bava Metzia actually tells us, kishot atzmecha ve'achar kach kishot acherim, that first you have to take care of yourself, and then you have to take care of other people. I'll give you the best analogy ever. I know it's been a while since we've last flown. Some of us. I haven't flown in a long time. But remember what happens when you fly. Stewardesses get on, and what does he or she say? They say, buckle your seatbelt. And then they say that in case the cabin pressure runs low, what's going to happen? The masks are going to come down. Never happened, right? But the masks are going to come down. And what do they point out to you afterwards? They make specific instructions. They say, when that happens, make sure to do what? Make sure to put on your mask before putting on someone else's mask. Is that because you don't care about other people? Is that because you're selfish and self-centered and egocentric? No. The whole idea is if your mask isn't on, then you can't help other people. Kishot atzmecha. First, you have to refine yourself. V'achar kach kishot acherim. And only then can you go and take care of other people. That's the machlokas between Abaye and Rava. They're not mutually exclusive. They're complementary. That Rava says, first you have to build your house. First you have to build yourself up. You have to invest in yourself. Or, in the words of Stephen Covey, in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, what's the most important thing to do? Sharpen your own saw. Right? That if my saw is frayed, if my saw is dumbed down, if it's numb, then it's not going to be able to cut through a tree and I'm going to be sawing back and forth and nothing's going to be happening. If I want to make an impact, if I want to make a dent in that tree, the most impactful thing I can do is instead of running towards the tree, first I can sharpen my own straw. That's, as Rava, is what we do first. First, we see Hashem in our house. We have to build up ourselves and our own house, our emunah, our children, and only then can we feel confident and comfortable to engage the world and to make sure that we impact and influence them. Rava and Abaye are not contradicting each other. They were complementing each other. Rava says, first you worry about yourself. First you build up the integrity, the religious, spiritual integrity of your own house. And only then can you go out and you can influence and impact other people. The Magen Mikuznets, I'm getting a little ahead of us, but the Magen Mikuznets, he quotes, says something amazing. And I never saw it this way. I know Hanukkah, we're only in Cheshva now, but we can look forward to Hanukkah, right? Hanukkah will be after my son's bar mitzvah, so I'm looking forward to that a little bit as well, because I have no idea what we're doing for my son's bar mitzvah yet. But here we go. Magen Mikuznets, Hanukkah. You ready? The Gemara says that near Hanukkah, where is the mitzvah to place your menorah? Al Pesach Beso Mibachutz. They're supposed to put it at your door going outside. And we all know the Dvar Torah about that. Dvar Torah is because Hanukkah represents Torah. And we're not supposed to keep Torah to ourselves. We're supposed to spread it far and wide. We're supposed to use the Torah values to influence and impact other people. But continues the Gemara, Uvishas HaSakana. And in a time of danger, what do? Manicha al Shulchano Vidayo. Don't worry about placing it at your door. Don't worry about going outside. You place it on your table and shine. And that's it. That's all you have to do. Says the Magen Mikuznets, this is an amazing idea. That in the best of times, you're right, you place the menorah at your door and you try to influence other people. But nashas sakana, when the influences of the world around us are so counterintuitive, are so antithetical to Jewish values, bishasa sakana, kishayesh chashash shebemakom shu yitake nosam haomdim b'chutz alulim heim lekalkel chas v'shalom. When we're worried that it's going to cause us harm, then what's the advice? Manicha al shulchano v'dayo. Then you have to work on yourselves. You have to build up your own sense of emunah. So was Noach a tzaddik? Was Noach not a tzaddik? Of course Noach was a tzaddik. Says this beautiful sefer, Areshes Vaseinu, what Noach's calculation was, is that if I really want to influence the world, I first have to take care of myself. And while he may have tried for 120 years to influence other people, ultimately it became too much to bear. It became too much to handle. The influences were so destructive that Noach said, you know what? I need to build myself up. I need to work on my own emunah. I need to work on my own midos. I need to work on my own relationship with Hashem. So idea number two was this beautiful machlokas between Abaye and Rava. Where do you find Hashem? Rava says you find Hashem in your house. Abaye says you find Hashem outside. Says Areshes Vaseinu, this beautiful sefer, the answer is both. They're not contradictory, they're complementing each other. That first you have to take care of yourself. And only then can you have an impact on the world around you. That was Noach's calculation. Noach wasn't being a tzaddik in pelts. Noach wasn't in a derogatory way only caring about himself and not about other people. Noach simply made a calculation and he said, my spiritual armor is wearing down after 120 years. And so I need to now go and I need to go back to Kolel. I need to learn. I need to work on myself. I need to retreat and a little bit of meditation as well. And so the first two ideas were a little bit similar, but they both drive home the tzidkus of Yonah, the greatness of Yonah. Idea number one was this beautiful idea that Yonah is compared to Shabbos, that the Teva is compared to Shabbos. In the same way, what made Noach a righteous person was his ability, his willingness to retreat and to recharge his spiritual batteries. That is what Shabbos is to us. Shabbos is our opportunity to retreat and to recharge our spiritual batteries. Idea number two, Esti Moskowitz, because I'm going to give a test on you when we get home tonight. Idea number two is this beautiful idea from this beautiful Sefer Areshes Vasenu that Noach was a tzaddik. Noach just was taking to heart this idea of putting his own mask on before everyone else's mask. Why? Because if you don't work on yourself, then you can't work on other people as well. You're not going to be able to influence other people as well. Idea number three comes from the Parsha. Idea number three says the following. Tzohar ta'ase la'teva. You know what? I'll give you a bonus today. We'll make this 2B, okay? Tzohar ta'ase la'teva. Tzohar means that you should make an opening for daylight in the teva. Okay, now that's obvious why they needed that. The teva was an enclosed structure. If you don't have some form of a window, you're not going to be able to accomplish anything. You're not going to be able to see anything. So you obviously needed a window. Says Rashi, what was this tzohar? Yesh omrim chalon. There are some who say it was a window. V'yesh omrim even tova hameir lahem. And there were those who say that it was some stone inside the teva, which provided light for those in the teva. What a beautiful imagery. As a modern Orthodox Jew, as a Jew engaged in the world around us, then this notion of tzohar ta'ase la'teva. What was the tzohar? What was the light? So some say the light was a chalon. It was a window to the outside world. In other words, Noach's mission and his mandate, his purpose in the teva, was to create light for the world outside, to create light for the world around him. V'yesh omrim, and there are those who say, you know what this stone was? You know what this light was? It wasn't a light for everyone else, but it was a light for Noach. That is ultimately our job. Our job is both to be projecting light to the world outside, but also to be creating light on the inside. That was kind of like a 2B to the other ideas that we had shared, but I think it's a beautiful imagery, really beautiful imagery, of what light are we creating? And the answer is obviously that we're creating both. That we're both creating lights inside our home, inside our shuls, inside our schools. We're creating light for ourselves, but we're also supposed to then share that light with the world around us. In fact, the Medrash tells us that in the Beis HaMikdash, the windows were very strange. The windows were like this, okay? Why were the windows like this? Because you want to take the light that was inside and magnify it to the light that was outside. That was the mission of this Beis HaMikdash, not to keep the light in, but to spread it out. Again, we'll call that 2B. Last idea comes from a comparison. Now we know that Noach is compared to lots of figures in Tanakh. Noach is compared to Moshe. Noach is compared to Avram. But I want to compare Noach to Adam in our last few moments. And I want to ask a very simple question. My question is, why does Noach's world survive and Adam's world does not survive? Both Noach and Adam make a mistake. They actually make a catastrophic mistake, right? Adam sins in Gan Eden. Hashem says, kaput, you're done. World is going to be destroyed. Noach, immediately after coming out of the Teva, he sins. V'noach v'yachel, he makes himself desecrated. V'yata kerem, he plants a vineyard. V'yachel, he desecrates himself. Noach makes a mistake. Why does Noach's world survive, but Adam is thrown out of Gan Eden, which leads in a domino effect to the destruction of the world? Why did Noach's world survive and Adam's world does not survive? That's the question I want you to think about a little bit, and I want you to ask everyone at your Shabbos tables, and I'll offer my suggestion right now, is that there is a very specific difference between Noach and Adam, that while there are many similarities between the two of them, there is one noticeable difference, and that is as follows. That Adam was born into a world where everything was handed to him on a silver platter. Adam was born into a world where everything was ready-made for him. He simply showed up and he enjoyed the benefits of the world. Noach was the exact opposite. Noach exits the Teva. And what is there for him? Absolutely nothing. Noach was born into a world where there was absolutely nothing, and it was his job to build. Think about the very first thing that he does when he comes into the world, outside of the Teva, the recreation of the world. He has to plant a vineyard. He has to recreate the world. He is now an active, engaged participant into the world around him. Noach was forced to work in his new reality. And so the difference between Noach and Adam is that while Adam had everything handed to him on a silver platter, he never had to work for anything. And when you don't work for something, when you don't have skin in the game, when you don't put in effort, it's not viable. It's not going to last. It's not going to mean anything to you. But when you put in that effort, when you work hard for something, when you're an active participant in the creation of something, now it means a lot to you. Now you're invested in its overall success. Noach has to plant and to cultivate the world. He has to prepare it for its renewed habitation. And with that, he's able to almost guarantee its success from the start. You see, the world of Adam, where everything was placed in front of him without his active involvement, is never going to endure. But the world of Noach, where he helped to create it, that's a world that continues to exist. And the message for us in this third idea, I think, is very powerful. Whether it comes to our children, whether you're an educator and it comes to your students, or whether it comes to yourself, right? If you make people view as partners, not just recipients, then they develop a greater motivation, a greater sense of responsibility, and there's a greater chance for success. That we can't outsource our Judaism. We don't just pay tuition and say, you know what, I paid a school, let them educate my child. No, we have to be active participants in it if we want it to matter. You want your children to have meaning and passion towards their Judaism? Then yes, sometimes it requires hard work in it. It requires making them an active participant. It requires us to get off the sidelines and get skin in the game. Because if we simply take things as a silver platter, it's not going to endure. That was the world of Adam. It couldn't exist anymore. But when we put in the effort, when we work hard for something, then that is what guarantees its overall success. I could go on and on and on about this, about the IKEA, the IKEA phenomenon, right? Why do people pay for IKEA? Makes no sense. I pay a lot of money and then I have to build it. The whole idea is because when I build it, the furniture actually, it has more value to me than when I just pay for something to be delivered to my house. That's what our Judaism is. Our Judaism requires the effort. That's why Gemara, everyone asks, why is Gemara so hard? You want to know why Gemara is so hard? Because if you work at it, it means something to you. You know why Torah and Judaism and belief in Hashem are so hard? Because anything easy in life is not going to be meaningful. That was the world of Adam. The world of Noach says, if you put in the effort, if you plant, if you build, that's what's going to ultimately guarantee its overall success. And so, we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. Number one, we saw the idea of Noach's comparison to Shabbos. That what made Noach such a righteous individual was his ability to pull back, to reflect, and to re-energize his spiritual batteries. That is what Shabbos has to be for us. Shabbos for us has to be that respite from the world around us. Think of the imagery of that peddler in the forest with the snow and the winds and the storm. And he gets to that inn and it gives him the confidence to go back into that storm. Shabbos gives us the confidence. It gives us the ability to engage with the world and to emerge successfully. Noach is a tzaddik. Idea number two is that Gemara and Brachos, that very strange Gemara and Brachos, where do you find Hashem? Rava says you find Hashem in the house. Abai says you find Hashem underneath the sun and the moon and the stars. They're not arguing. They're two sides of the coin. They complement each other. That first we have to build up our own reservoirs. We have to work on educating ourselves and working on our emunah. And only then can we go into influence other people. Revolbi, I can go on for hours about this. Revolbi, in a little essay he writes for chasanim, for men about to get married, he writes his very idea. He says, now is the time to work on yourself, to build yourself up. Because if you're going to influence and impact a family, you have to have that reservoir within yourself. Your cup can't overflow unless your cup is full. Noach was a tzaddik. Because Noach was working on himself, he was trying to build himself up so that he can go out into the world and rebuild and replant. And idea number three was, why does Noach's world succeed when Adam's didn't? Both of them sinned. Both of them rebelled against Hashem in a certain respect. There was one noticeable difference between the two of them, and that is that Adam had everything handed to him on a silver platter. And when everything is handed to you on a silver platter, it can't have that same meaning. But when you work for something, when you work hard for something, when you sacrifice for something, that gives it meaning. I think, by the way, parenthetically, that's one of the great challenges of our generation towards the state of Israel. Right? If you grew up in the 60s, in the 50s, in the 70s, and you didn't take Israel for granted, and Israel bonds, and you were giving money to Israel because you didn't take Israel's existence for granted, Israel meant something to you. If you grew up in a world that you always had Israel and you always had Yerushalayim and you could simply take it for granted, it was handed for you on a silver platter, you just jump on an El Al plane and you're in Israel 11 hours later. So, you know, it doesn't mean the same to you unless you have that same sacrifice, unless you have that same active involvement in the building of the land of Israel. I think that's what so many young people nowadays struggle to find, that passion toward Israel. I think the same thing applies to our Judaism as well. And so it is 10:01. I hope I've given you three ideas, food for thought. Three ideas to energize us for the Parsha. As always, I offer that if anyone is interested, there are sponsorship opportunities for our classes on Friday. But I want to wish everyone a happy and healthy and wonderful, meaningful Shabbos. And with that, I